So, okay, I got to take you to a moment. It was a Sunday, much like today. It was back when we were meeting at the YMCA. Our church used to meet at the YMCA down the road before the fire last year and before we came here. But it was around here, Sundays start pretty early for those of us who are on part of the setup team. And so a lot of times for me, I'm one of the first people here and one of the last people to leave. This particular Sunday, things had gone really good, and I remember we had loaded out the building, we had loaded up our trailer, it was getting parked, and I remember walking to my car, and I could just feel my couch under my back. You ever have one of those days, you're like, I'm just ready for a nap, like I just gotta lay down and take a nap, and so I get ready to go get in the car and leave, and I'm just like, this is it, I'm gonna go relax. And my son is standing there, and he greets me with this really guilty-looking face. If you're a parent, you know that face, you're like, oh no. Like, what are we about to get to? And he goes, Dad, I was just in the car, and I locked the doors, and the keys are still in there. You ever been there? Like, now, there's some things that I can put up with. Like, I've lost my keys before. I can deal with that. I've been in my house before, and like, my wife had the house keys, and I didn't realize they were not on my ring, and I'm still like, I locked myself out. But there's one thing that I cannot stand. I'm not going to throw my son under the bus here, because I've done this more times than I can even count myself. I cannot stand locking my keys in the car, because they're right there. They're right there. Like, I'm seeing them. They're this far away. How thick is glass? Like, they're that far away. And you're like, I'll just break the glass. No, that would be more trouble than it's worth. And you're just sitting there, and people got coat hangers, and you're like trying to do voodoo magic on the car. And there's like, I can't stand it. And this is why, because I have proximity to my keys, but no access. There they are. Have you experienced that? Maybe you've experienced it in a different way. Maybe you've been to one of these mom and pop shops, you know, a little store, maybe in the middle of nowhere, somewhere in town, and they're really cool and they don't use the internet. And so you get there, and you have all your stuff picked out, you know, and you go to the counter, and they're cash only. And a lot of us don't carry cash. And you're like, no debit card? They're like, no, sorry, we don't do the debit card things. But I have money. It's right here. No access to it. Or have you ever been, we live at the beach here, and it's really cool to get to go to the ocean anytime we want to. It's great. Anytime I want to, I can go to the ocean, except for when all the people who don't live here want to go to the ocean, right? And so there's that moment where you're driving down the beach road. I mean, it's right there. You can smell the ocean. You got your window down, and the ocean's right there, but there are no parking places. And you have to park like a mile away, and you burn your feet up walking because you didn't bring shoes because I was just going to walk out on the beach, right? And you're like, it's right there. I've got proximity to the ocean, but no access. I told those stories because I kind of want to put us in a mindset today, in a zone today. What I want to talk about today is access. Access. In fact, can everyone say this word? Say accessible. 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 More specifically, not how we can get access to our car keys, though if you've seen mine, I would love to have them because I normally lose them. But more specifically, how can we show people that God is near, that they're in proximity to his love, and give them access to that? Our word for today is accessible. You'll see down underneath the stage here, we've got all these words. We've been in this teaching series through the book of Acts called When God Sparks a Movement. And the book of Acts is the fifth book of the New Testament in the Bible. So if you've got a Bible, you can flip over to about the last third of your Bible is the New Testament. And it's the story of Jesus and his teachings and the early church and where it all came from. And the book of Acts is this awesome narrative about how the church began and how God used it to spark a movement that would change the world. And so down here you see these words, and each one of those represents one part of the book of Acts that we've studied through. Hopefully you've been keeping up with some of those. Today's word is accessible. Accessible. 2 weeks ago we met a man named Paul. Do you remember Paul? His name was Saul. Then he started to go by Paul. Paul was a man who was absolutely transformed when he met Jesus from someone who was a persecutor of Christians to someone who became the leader of the church. In fact, the greatest missionary to ever live. And the majority of the book of Acts is the story of Paul traveling around the Mediterranean Sea area and establishing churches, going all over the place and planting churches and getting them going. So if you don't know what the majority of the book of Acts is, that's basically what it is. It's this journey of him going. And here's the thing that Paul was excellent at. Paul had a model that he used as he went into each different area of the world, in each different city, in each different demographic, even each different language group. The question that you might ask is, how would you go about talking about this? This is something we talked about for several weeks. Like, how do you go about beginning a conversation about Jesus, especially to a group of people who don't know anything about him? And he had a very simple model that I think he kind of picked up from Jesus. I think it's going to be in the screen behind me, too. This is his model. He would meet people where they are to make God's love accessible to them. That was his whole missionary strategy. He would go in, he would find out, he wouldn't say, you need to come to this place, you need to become this type of person, you need to learn and know about this thing or understand and read this book. He would just say, where are you? Okay, we'll start there. Meet people where they are and make God's love accessible to them. I would love to summarize the entire book of Acts for you. That's kind of what the series has been about, but we are skipping over a lot of it because there's a lot that we aren't going to be covering in this series. It'd be for another time. But what I want to do this morning is share a summary of the book of Acts with you in a really fun way that our kids in the back, our elementary age class, they've been going through a Bible curriculum called What's in the Bible? Really great curriculum, and basically the whole idea of What's in the Bible is they, in the course of 1 year, they are studying the entire Bible. And I'm telling you, if you got kids who have been in this class, am I right, parents who have kids in this class, like they're learning the Bible. They're learning the books of the Bible. They're learning the chronology of how things are laid out in the Bible. They're learning the different parts of the Bible. And so not only is this a great teaching resource for kids, it's actually really good for adults too. I've watched it with my kids, a lot of it. I've been to Bible college. I actually have 2 degrees in Bible-related stuff. And like I'm watching this little cartoon show, and I'm like, I did not know that. And so this is really good. So what I want to do is instead of trying to summarize the whole book of Acts for you, I want to show you a piece of a video from one of their lessons. Let's check this out. This is going to be a summary of what's happened in the book of Acts.
Three big trips. The first was around 46 AD.
Look, we're drawing a line.
Starting in Antioch, Paul sailed to the island of Cyprus, then sailed up to Asia Minor and visited the city of Perga, another city called Antioch, Iconium, Lystra, and Derbe. Then he did the whole thing backwards, Lystra, Iconium, the other Antioch, Perga, then Attalia, then sailed all the way back to Antioch, 1,400 miles.
He must have used a lot of gas.
No, he was either in a boat or walking the whole way.
I bet those Roman roads came in, Andy.
They sure did. His next trip was much further.
Around 49 AD, he walked to Tarsus, then Cilicia, Derbe, Lystra, Iconium, Phrygia.
That sounds cold.
I don't think it was. Then up to an area called Galatia, and all the way over to another called Mysia, then Troas, and then he visited Samothrace, Neapolis, Philippi, Amphipolis, Apollonia, Thessalonica, Berea, then all the way down to Athens, which is the center of Greek culture, then over to Corinth, where he stayed for a year and a half, then Cenchreae, then back on a boat and all the way over to Ephesus, then all the way down back across the Mediterranean, all the way to Caesarea.
Whoa, what a long trip.
And then to Jerusalem, 2,800 miles.
He must have worn out his sneakers.
I think he wore out several pair of sneakers.
And finally, a few years later, around 52 AD, he went on his third big trip. From Antioch, he walked all the way up through Galatia.
That would make your feet sore.
Then to Phrygia, then on to Ephesus, where he stayed for 3 years.
That's a long time.
Then all the way up to an area called Macedonia.
Macedonia, I like that name.
And back on another boat, all the way down to Corinth. Then all the way back up to Macedonia.
Again?
Yep, again. And then on another boat over to Troas, Assos, Mytilene, Chios, Samos, Miletus, Kos, down to Rhodes, over to Patara, then once again back across the Mediterranean Sea all the way to Tyre, and down to Ptolemais, Caesarea, and finally back to Jerusalem again, another 2,700 miles.
That's a lot of traveling.
It sure is. It's like crossing America from one end to the other 3.5 times, and without cars or trains or planes, just his 2 feet and a boat here and there.
It's pretty amazing what Paul did. And everywhere he went, he preached and taught people about Jesus, and the new Christians gathered together. They assembled together in groups in each town. We call these groups churches, a word that means assembly or to gather together.
right, let's give it up for British puppets. Man, I wish I had cool lessons like that when I was a kid at church. We had flannel graph. Does anybody remember flannel graph? Yeah, it's flannel that you stick to other flannel. That's flannel graph. Incidentally, while I'm here, our kids' ministry in the back is awesome. Some of you guys are volunteers with that. Thank you for helping to raise a new generation of God chasers. And sure, let's clap that out. I do want to say this. As our church continues to grow, we have always got great opportunities to serve with our children, down to the little babies, up to the elementary age kids, teachers, assistant teachers, people that are security monitors in the hallway. If you're interested in getting involved and helping with our kids, make a note on your connection card and drop it in the bucket before you leave, because we do a background check, we do training. It's easy peasy, but we would love to give you that opportunity. But back to Acts. I showed that video because you can see that is a lot of traveling. Almost 70,000 miles Paul traveled, mostly on foot. Just to clarify, he was not in an airplane, in a boat when he crossed the sea, also getting involved in several shipwrecks. It was a hard endeavor. And I'm so thankful for those people in the book of Acts who went out and began to share the message of Jesus around the world. And here's what they did. They went and they planted churches. But not just a church here, a church there, a church here, a church there, and we're done. These are churches that were multiplying churches. They were churches who planted churches, who planted churches, who planted churches. And then way out in the future, once upon a time, there would be a church planted in Wilmington, North Carolina, that happens to meet at Alderman Elementary School. We are part of the same legacy that was begun so many years ago by so many faithful people who decided to make it their life's mission to share the message of Jesus with anybody that they came into. And so the question is raised, how in the world did they do it? How did they go to all these variety of different places and somehow be relatable? I mean, these guys are first century Jewish men. How are they going into very Greek cultures? How are they going into places up in the mountains of Galatia where things were completely different, where their whole worship structure was completely different? I think it was because they learned to meet people where they are, show them that God is near, and help them find access to it. In fact, I think it's a thing that we can learn today about your friends, your neighbors, your families. The ability to find people where they are, show them that God is near, and help them gain access to that. Now, I'm not going to tell all the stories of the book of Acts today. I hope that you will go look at some of them. But we are going to look at just one in specific. If you've got a Bible, at Venture Church, we say we love to look at the Bible to the answers to life's most important questions. And so if you've got a Bible, will you grab it and open it up, if you haven't already, to the book of Acts, chapter 17. If you don't have one, we've got free ones we give away. Some of them are scattered under your seats. And if you don't have one at all, that's cool. We've got the scriptures up on the screen behind me. But we'll be landing in one of the cities that they mentioned, the city called Athens. Now, you may have heard of Athens from your history class in high school. If you fell asleep in high school, it's okay. I'll give you a little bit of a history lesson. Very important story, historical city, Athens. Athens' main claim to fame was that it was a place of thinking. From Athens, we get what is basically modern-day philosophy. It's where reasoning and logic were God. It was where people came together and they simply thought. And we have these people that we know about from history now that came from Athens, people like Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, and guys like these would start schools of learning, and world leaders would come, and they'd be educated at these schools. Alexander the Great, for example, was one person who went to school in Athens and then took over the world, right? And so that's what's happening in the city of Athens, and so you can imagine that coming into a city like that with a really theological worldview and to a group of people who are all like, I can think my way out of this, you're going to have to kind of find some ways to introduce God. And that's what Paul does. And I think this is one of the places he did it the best. We're going to be in Acts chapter 17. And starting in verse 16 is actually where that story starts. So join in with me. Acts 17, verse 16. Let's go. While Paul was waiting for them in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. And so he reasoned in the synagogue with both Jews and God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace day by day with those who happened to be there. So let's stop right there. It was Paul's custom as he went into a new city to first start out by visiting whatever Jews might live there. Because why? Well, first of all, he was a Jew, and so there was a lot of cultural things there. They probably spoke similar language and liked some of the same foods and stuff like that. But mostly because his message was, hey, the fulfillment of all Jewish prophecy has happened. Jesus is here. I wanted to make sure you knew. So he would go to the synagogues, which is the Jewish place of worship. But then from there, he would kind of spread out. In Athens, for example, there were public places where people could speak or entertain. And if you were good, people would gather around and they would listen to what you have to say. And if you were bad, well, not so much. You've seen this in maybe if you've been to New York City in the subway and like you got this really good entertainer and he's playing music and he's banging on pots and buckets and you're like, I would give you a dollar to let you keep playing. And so that's the kind of thing that's going on with Athens, with Paul in Athens. And as he's speaking, apparently what he says begins to catch some people's attention. And so we're going to look at verse 18 and see how it goes. It says, a group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers began to debate with him, with Paul. Some of them asked, what is this babbler trying to say? But others remarked, he seemed to be advocating foreign gods. I just imagine them standing around with like twiddling their beards, like talking to each other. That's just what I imagine. They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. Verse 19. Then they took him and brought him to a meeting at the Areopagus. We'll get to that in a second. Where they said to him, may we know what this new teaching is that you're presenting? You're bringing some strange ideas to our ears, and we would like to know what they mean. All the Athenians and foreigners who lived there spent their time doing nothing but talking about and listening to the latest ideas. It was kind of like Chapel Hill, I think. Stoics and Epicureans. That's the people that he meets here. This group of Stoics and Epicureans come by. And let's just kind of get to know them a little bit. They were major philosophical parties, kind of schools of thought in the day. The Stoics first. The Stoics believed that the path to true happiness was in self-denial. They were very simple people. They had this idea that having enjoyable things was good. Would you all agree that having enjoyable things is good? Yeah, they agree with you on that. But once you lost that thing, it made you sad. Would you agree with that? Like I had ice cream and it's all gone, right? Or it gave me a bellyache, right? And so therefore, the true path to happiness is to not deny yourself everything and crave nothing. Sounds like a lot of fun. They say less is more. They say no materialism. They say keep it simple. And so there were some things about Christianity, though, that actually appealed to the Stoics. Because there's a major portion of Christianity that says it's not about this material world. It's not about the stuff that we have, right? And we talk about that kind of stuff. So as the Stoics are sitting there listening to Paul, they're like, huh, twiddling their beards and saying, I think I can take some of this in. That's the Stoics. On the other hand, you've got the Epicureans. Okay, the Epicureans, they barely denied themselves anything. They had the famous phrase, which was, if you know it, say it with me, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Or if you're a Dave Matthews fan, you might know that song. And so that was their philosophy. They just said, you know what? The world is our playground. In fact, all good things are good. There were rules and there were some limits to what they did. They weren't absolute hedonists, but they very much enjoyed pleasure. The true path to happiness is physical pleasure. So you can see where the Epicureans and the Stoics, they don't line up a lot of things. What's interesting, though, is as Paul's preaching, there were some things that he was saying that really got their attention. For example, one thing that the Epicureans believed that the Stoics didn't believe was they believed in a spiritual realm. And the idea that there's a spiritual thing, that there's more beyond the material, that really got their attention and they wanted to hear more. And so there's pieces of what Paul was saying that appealed to the Stoics. There are pieces of what Paul was saying that appealed to the Epicureans. So they do something very important, I'm not saying that's novel, that no one else experienced this. I'm sure they did this all the time, actually. But they invited Paul to an inner circle meeting because they wanted to hear more. They invited him to something called the Areopagus. I've got a picture of the Areopagus here. This big rock, it doesn't look like much, does it? But it was called the Areopagus. It's also called Mars Hill by the Romans. There's reasons for that, but I don't want to get into it. But they get up there and they would sit and think and they would talk. And this was the inner core. These were the leadership of the city, in fact. And they would make big decisions. They would have big debates there and trials and stuff. And Paul, as an outsider, being invited to the Areopagus is a big deal. I think it's really cool that Paul gets invited. Because what I think it shows is that when we begin to talk about God, people are interested. It's all about how we say it, whether or not they're going to invite us to talk some more. So Paul gets invited to the Areopagus. Now, if you had a chance to talk to a group of people who, and I don't think I'm judging or going out on a limb here to say that these people had no knowledge of Jesus. Okay, if you were going to talk to that group of people, what would you say? How would you approach them? What would you do? I have been approached by people, and they try to tell me about Jesus in ways that were downright offensive. And I am a Christian. So, like, you know, I've had people come to my door and just say things, and I'm like, I'm shutting the door. Like, you know, at one time I was in Walmart, and this guy, like, kind of creepily followed me around for several aisles. And then real quick, he kind of sheepishly was like, here. And he gives me this thing that tells me I'm going to hell. And I was like, well, and he was gone. And I think he meant well. I think he was trying to tell me about Jesus. Didn't come through, okay? And so these are bad methods about talking to people about God. But Paul has a different approach. How would you do it? This is how Paul does it. So we're going to get in verse 22, okay? Acts chapter 17, verse 22. So Paul gets to the meeting, and he stands up at the meeting of the Areopagus, and he says, people of Athens, the crowd, some scholars think, was maybe about 30, 40 people, and these were elite people. This isn't just everybody, but he addresses them. People of Athens, I see that in every way you are religious. For as I walked your streets, I looked carefully at your objects of worship. I even found one altar with this inscription, to an unknown God. So you are ignorant of the very thing you worship. And this is what I'm going to proclaim to you. Remember, they invited him to do this. And so he's like, if you want to know what I'm here to talk about, this is it. Paul knows the Old Testament law better than probably any of the other apostles or missionaries that ever walked. He could have easily given some big discourse, some like Old Testament law, and talked about Moses and Abraham and all kinds of things. He didn't do that. He also knew Jesus. Jesus ministered to him and taught him in a very special way. What's interesting, he doesn't even open up talking about Jesus. Instead, he comes to them and he begins to appeal to them about something that they all already knew about. In fact, there was a big conversation and discussion that had been ongoing among these philosophical minds about these statues, because many of them did not believe that there were gods. In fact, the Stoics didn't even believe in a spiritual realm, and the Epicureans weren't sure that if there were gods that it even mattered. And so the big debate was, why do we have all these statues? But on the flip side, most of these people continued to worship them. They would go to their temples. They would give parts of their money to the temples. They would make sacrifices and things to these gods. And so there's this big conundrum that they're in, right? It's this duplicity. It's like, we don't believe in them, but we're going to pretend like we believe them. And it went so far that they had this one statue that was called the idol to an unknown God. Just in case there is something out there, we want to cover all of our bases. We don't want to offend anybody. And so what does Paul do? He takes a picture of their own culture, and he says, let's talk about this thing that you guys are already talking about. I noticed that you had this statue to the unknown God. You know what? I happen to know him very well. Can I tell you about him? And he continues in verse 24. He says, the God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth. And he does not live in temples made by human hands. And he is not served by human hands. And if he needs anything, rather he himself gives everyone life and breathes and breath and everything else. From one man, he made all the nations that they should inhabit the whole earth. And he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him. Though he is not far from any one of us. Do you hear what he said? God is near. God is near. In fact, you kind of already noticed it, didn't you? Like, you had these statues already. You had some sense that there was something you should be doing. Paul begins to preach, but he's not preachy. He doesn't call them stupid. He doesn't try to scare them or alienate them. He meets them where they are in a conversation that they were already having. And what's awesome is what we read in verse 27. Look at it again. He says, God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far for many of us. He says, God's closer to you than you could imagine. He's right here. He's in close proximity. But I want you to know that's not good enough. It's not good enough just to be close to God. I want to let you know that God is relatable, that he's understandable, that he's accessible. So he continues. He meets them right where they are. Then he takes one last step to show them a way closer. Verse 28, he says, For in him we live and we move and we have our being. As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring. Keep verse 28 in the back of your mind. For in him we live and in him we move and in him we have our being. For we are his offspring. That's something that he quoted from their poets. He doesn't read Isaiah to them. He doesn't go back and read some big discourse from the Old Testament. He doesn't preach to them some 3-point sermon from a revival he heard somewhere. He's like, you know what? your own artists have noticed this. Your poets have said this kind of thing. Again, meeting them where they are. Verse 29, therefore, since we're God's offspring, we should not think that the divine being is like gold or silver or stone, an image made by human design and skill, aka idols and statues. We shouldn't think that we should bow down to something that we made. I know John the idol maker, like that dude made those idols, right? He made those. God is bigger than that. He's stronger than that. He's more able than that. He's closer than you could ever realize. And in verse 30, he says, in the past, God overlooked such ignorance. The fact that we worship the created world, right? People have done that for generations. But now he commands everyone everywhere to repent. And this is the first mission after this that we hear something about Jesus. And it's just a sentence and it's just a snippet, but it's enough to start to show them the door. Access. Verse 31, for he has sent God has set a day when he will judge the world with justice by the man he has appointed and has given proof of this to everyone by raising him from the dead. All of a sudden, if I'm at the Areopagus with Paul, I'm like, hold up, what? Okay, I heard you down in the marketplace. You're talking about somebody raising from the dead, and now? Okay, I need to know more about this. We don't get the rest of his speech. They didn't talk for short periods of time at the Areopagus. It takes a long time to get on that rock, so you got to talk while you're up there. I imagine he preached a lot more. But here's what I want us to see. That making God's love and truth accessible isn't about watering down the truth. It's not about skipping over the hard details. Paul actually says to them, like, you should repent, which is a word, which means turn away from sinful things. Turn towards God. He talks about sin. You don't skip over Jesus and the fact that, is it really crazy to believe that someone rose from the dead? That's difficult to swallow. He doesn't skip over that at all. But before he gets there, he says, let's talk about some things that you know about. These statues that are all over your streets. These poets that have written these awesome lines. Paul teaches us that it's about meeting people where they are and helping to point them towards Jesus. When I was a youth pastor, I worked with middle school and high school students. I did that for 10 years, and I loved it. I love working with teenagers and just how their minds work, and some of you can't stand the thought of that. That's why there's people like me in the world. You change diapers, and I'll hang out with teenagers, and we've got a good deal, okay? Hanging out with these cool kids was cool, and I'll tell you something the kids don't respond well to. If you have a teenager that's not listening to you right now, listen to what I'm saying, okay? This is something teenagers do not respond well to. Lectures, okay? They don't respond well to that. So if your teenager is not listening to you while you're lecturing them, remember what I said, okay? Not as a dad, but as a dude that was a youth worker for a long time. But you know what they do respond well to? Friendship. They respond well to relationships. And so when I wanted to reach these students that I worked with you know, the message of God, I did teach lessons, and there were times where it was kind of lectury and stuff like that. But more than anything, I wanted to spend time with these kids. And so I was going to their house after school, picking them up and going to play video games, or I would go watch their ball games with their parents, or we'd do events together with the whole youth group, and we'd hang out. And, it wouldn't have worked well if I just stopped right on day one. I was like, are you dating anyone? Yeah? Okay, well, we're going to have a talk about abstinence right now, okay? You know, turn off the lights, leave, it's done, it's over. But in the context of a relationship, and we're hanging out, and suddenly these students begin asking me for advice about relationships. All of a sudden, in the context of a relationship, meeting them where they are, I might be sitting behind an Xbox shooting people. It's a video game, not like really shooting people. And they begin to talk about their relationship, and suddenly I have permission to show them what God would have for them. It's about making the truth of God accessible from where people are. It's meeting people where they are and showing them the staircase to the next level, or opening a door with them, or more often than not, holding their hand and walking alongside them for a long time. It's about helping the truth of God be accessible to people. As a church, that's what we try to do. We've got this phrase, I say it all the time, we want to tear down the walls that have kept people away from church and God so that we can build a bridge to what matters most. There are so many things that make faith and Christianity just like inaccessible. And what's crazy is many of those things aren't even necessary. The Bible doesn't talk about them. And there's no reason we should do them, but often we walk into a church, and if you've ever been there, you walked in and you felt like you were from another planet. And you don't know how to plug in. You don't know how to start to learn because you don't even know if you're wearing the right shoes. I want you to know something. I'm not talking about Sunday morning services right now. What I want to talk about with us today is how we interact with the people in this city. How can they see from our lives that something's different? If you're here today and it's your first time, or maybe you're in a place where you're still seeking God and you're asking some of the questions that these Stoics and Epicureans were, I'm glad you're here. I really am. And I'm glad that the person that invited you or whatever way that you found your way into this building, you might have thought it was school today and you just came in and for parent-teacher conference and you're really early. I'm really glad you came, and I want you to know, and I'm curious, you can give us feedback. Like, is that happening from the people that you're meeting from our church? Because I want to be a group of people who can show that God is accessible, that he is near and he's accessible. And let's start right where you are. Let's start with your problem, with your mess. You know how I could do that? Let me show you my problem and my mess. And let me show you how God has bridged the gap for me there. You know, after Paul's time, in Acts chapter 2, Peter preached. I often wonder if Peter and Paul ever had like a comparison contest to see who did the best after preaching. In Acts chapter 2, do you remember how many people responded to his message and got baptized? Do you remember? Come on, anybody? Be brave. 3,000. 3,000 people got baptized today. Woo, yeah. After this meeting of the Areopagus, you want to know how many people responded? Two. But I bet Paul was thrilled. These were people who were far, far, far away from even beginning to understand who God is, let alone Jesus. And two people responded, and guess who they were? Two members of the Areopagus crew. Yeah, these are influential people. These are people who had, and let me tell you something. Today, in Athens, there are still churches. It wasn't for naught. The church continued, and it blossomed, and it thrived, and here we are today. That's a story from Acts 17. And maybe you've been down the road for a while where you've been in kind of Christianity or church for a while and you feel like the beach is right over that hill or your car keys are right there in your seat. Maybe you've been coming to church and you've been a part of it, but you're like, I don't know how to get started. My grandma brought me to church. My wife's bringing me to church. I'm coming because my parents bring me. Where do I begin? Well, the first thing I want you to know is this, that God is near. He's right there. He's in the things that we see every day, the things that you can't explain that are just beyond you, that you're like, there's got to be something more. I want to take the confidence that Paul had among those people who could have easily ostracized him and say, it's God. He's there, he's real, and he's near, and he's a personal God, and he loves you. And the way to have access to him is to start learning about what he did through Jesus. God became a man, a human being. And we call God in human flesh, we call him Jesus. And Jesus said, you know what? Our sin separates us from God. Human beings, our sin separates us from God. Because God is perfect, not because God is vengeful and he just doesn't want us to be with him, but because he is perfect. And in his perfection, our sin messes that state up. But he said, I can bridge the gap for you. I can come down and I can pay the penalty for your sin, the penalty for our sin. We talk about hell and stuff a lot, but ultimately the penalty for sin is this separation from God. We're no longer compatible with his presence. It's like oil and water. It doesn't mix. And so Jesus says, I tell you what, I will take the penalty for your sin. I will experience separation from God. And he did. He died on the cross and he bore the weight and the guilt of all the sins of humanity. But here's the coolest thing. He rose from the dead. He really did. The single most important fact about Christianity is understanding whether or not Jesus rose from the dead. And what's so awesome is that that's something that can be studied and validated by evidence. Like historical accounts, people who weren't Christians, people who wrote about it, things that happened alongside. And I've talked about that in the past. And if you want to know more, we've got a couple blogs on our website. And I'd be glad to hand you a few books that just talk about all the details that help us understand. But check this out. Jesus rose from the dead and in that defeated the punishment for death, which is separation from God. He said, you can be with me now. Not only am I near, but you have access to my presence. Talk to me. Pray to me. Let me help you through life. Maybe that's you. Maybe you needed to hear that. For the rest of us, maybe you've heard that. I got to ask you a question. Who do you need to make the message of Jesus accessible to? Who's that person in your life? Don't think like, you know, I'm going to start some big nonprofit that's going to be a thing. Like, no, you might do that one day, but I'm talking about the one person in your life, the one person who's been asking questions, who's been standing around listening to you talk or watching you live, and you know that they are curious about your faith, and you know that they want to know that God is near. How can you make God accessible to them? I'm going to tell you where you start. You start over a cup of coffee. You start over inviting them to your house for dinner. You start meeting them at a park to let your kids play while you talk. The first step isn't inviting them to church on Sunday morning, especially if someone's very far from God. It's first to be in a relationship with them. Just let them know God is near. Maybe they don't see it. You can say, well, I'll be praying for you. I want to pray for your situation. I want to pray for what you're going through. God loves you. God is near. Start where people are. Show them that they are in proximity to God, and then make it accessible to them with whatever it is they're in. And here's the thing. History has proven this. Jesus transforms lives. And the next thing you know, they'll be a better missionary than you are. They'll be telling everybody about what Jesus did for them. And it all happens because Jesus makes God accessible. I want to pray for you guys today. God, you are good. And as I look through the pages of Acts, I'm just struck by the boldness of these guys, ladies too, that were just walking into strange territory with just a message. Almost 70,000 miles of walking? What? I don't want to walk to the mailbox. I drive. And all just to share your love. Lord, thank you for making your truth accessible to us. We don't have to wonder about it. We don't have to have PhDs in theology or know foreign languages. We can know that you're real because of your presence in the world, and then we can learn more from people who have experienced it and learn more beyond us. We thank you most of all for Jesus, who gives us access. We love you. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.